Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm Dan Vogel.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. When a traveling exhibit passed with Egyptian mummies through the Kirtland, Ohio area in the 1830s, Joseph Smith encouraged the saints to raise money and purchase the mummies and the scrolls. Did those scrolls contain the Book of Abraham? In our next conversation with Dan Vogel, we'll talk about how these scrolls came into the possession of Joseph Smith, as well as what is written on them. Check out our conversation. I think we've hit the first vision enough of that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on a little bit, because the other thing, and I know you've put a lot of videos lately on the Book of Abraham.
Yeah.
And that seemed, I went to a conference at BYU. I know Robin Jensen was there and Brian Haugleib and a few other people. It was really interesting. So let's talk a little bit about the Book of Abraham. And that took, a lot of that took place right here in Ohio, just up the road a couple hours, right?
Right. So in Kirtland, Ohio.
Yeah. Tell us about how the mummies got here and all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So they were discovered in Thebes, in Egypt. And they found a huge catacomb of mummies, and mummies usually have these three kinds of records, actually. They could have a book of breathings or a breathing permit on their chest, usually in their crossed arms, sitting there. Book of the Dead, or hypocephalus, that round facsimile too, under the head to hold the heat, body heat. And the breathing permit is a breathe in the next life. And so there were 11 mummies made their way to America, and somehow this Michael Chandler got a hold of them. He said that he inherited them from his uncle, but that has never been established. More likely, he was commissioned by some men in the East to tour with these and sell them and make money. So he's traveling. We have newspaper items from Cleveland where he exhibited the mummies. He sold, by the time he got to Kirtland, he only had four mummies, three female and one male. And the scroll that later was identified as the Book of Abraham scroll, the Book of Breathings, anciently owned by a priest named Hor or Horus, and on the chest of the male mummy. So Michael Chandler came into Kirtland, Ohio in late June 1835 or July, but about the 3rd of July, I think it is, Joseph Smith sees them. You have to pay to see them. So people are paying to see the mummies. Joseph Smith is interested in the papyri, but not the mummies. But Chandler doesn't want to sell them separately because, you know, he wants to sell everything, go home probably, you know. And Joseph Smith arranges with, there's like three parties that get together. One of them's him, but he has a problem paying, of course. But $2,400, which is quite a lot to purchase all of those. And he purchases them and shortly thereafter announces that there's two scrolls, and one scroll he identifies with the record of ancient Joseph, and another one with Abraham. And the earliest account we have of that is 19th of July. William W. Phelps, W.W. Phelps, writes a letter to his wife because he was in Missouri, and he came to Kirtland, and he's helping with the printing, Oliver Cowdery with the printing, and he's also arranging the 1835 Doctrine and Covenants, and he's a Joseph Smith scribe, and he works in Joseph Smith's office, and he's staying with Joseph. He and his son are staying with Joseph Smith. He writes, his wife mentions Joseph Smith as no one could read these writings, and that Joseph Smith has identified them as the writings of Abraham and ancient Joseph. So, the main article we have written on this is December of 1835. So 1835 is a pretty busy year, you can see. one of the things, so the main article is December. In the Messenger and Advocate, Oliver Cowdery publishes a long letter he wrote this guy describing the scrolls and other things. He mentions two scrolls. He mentions one writing, an astronomical writing, which is probably the round facsimile 2, Hypocephalus, and epitaphs, and for the dead, you know, epitaph scrolls. So what he really has is one Horus scroll, Book of Breathings. He has one on the oldest female. There's a scroll, Ta Sheret Min, Book of the Dead, which is what we identify later as the record of ancient Joseph, which is the one that has all the nice little pictures and stuff and drawings of things that Oliver Cowdery describes, like the Pillar of Enoch and, you know, three in one God and stuff like that. So he also has some fragments, because these things are breaking off. The end pieces of scrolls are breaking off. And he probably sold this one, Amenhotep scroll. He probably sold that with another mummy, but he had some fragments that had broken off that Joseph Smith ended up getting and had. We don't have it anymore, but he had that Oliver Cowdery and W.W. Phelps copy parts off into these little notebooks that were later named. One of them was named Valuable Discovery Notebook. So I call them both Valuable Discovery Notebooks. I call them 1 and 2 or whatever, Phelps and Cowdery. And he translated parts of that in these notebooks. And it identified the mummies as ancient Egyptians. Ketumen, Princess Ketumen, her father Onidas, her mother would be Ketumen also, because it turns out that this name turns out to be a royal lineage name. So does Onidas. So he writes about them and gives approximate, you know, the years in which they lived in these little, in the Valuable Discovery notebooks with drawings. And then Oliver Cowdery writes, like, above this paragraph of hieratic Egyptian characters stands a figure of a woman, which is really a man, Amenhotep, the guy, the owner of the scroll. So he had fragments from that are lost now. So for the month of July, it seems he was working on identifying the mummies, who the mummies were, and also starting an alphabet of the Egyptian language, there's three, which are like little notebooks. They're only like 5 pages each. One's in mostly W.W. Phelps. Then there's one in Joseph Smith's handwriting, and one in Oliver Cowdery's handwriting. And they draw these characters in the margins and brief definitions, meanings. They're not really translations. They're translations, but they're really not like that this means exactly this. They're more like definitions, like a dictionary, what you expect a dictionary, you know, kind of a vague meaning. And instead of a precise word, you know, like you might expect. So that's what they're called, alphabets. And they're more like a dictionary, really. So then they started a grammar in a bound, a larger volume, that they transitioned these alphabets into this grammar. So the alphabets actually, some people thought that, oh, this is, you know, the working papers for the Book of Abraham. And they've debated whether which came first, you know, the alphabets or the Book of Abraham translation. And there's a reason for that debate. Because they say, well, this is the working papers. He shows his characters. He doesn't know what he's doing, you know, with the Egyptian. It's all wrong. And then they look at the Book of Abraham over here, and the Book of Abraham has different characters. None of these, though. We have three major Book of Abraham translation manuscripts for Kirtland, Ohio. One mostly in Warren Parrish's handwriting. Well, all of it. Excuse me. The next one in Frederick G. Williams' handwriting. And then a third one that has half a page in W.W. Phelps' handwriting, and then the rest in Warren Parrish's handwriting. So, and they all have characters in the margins. A character kind of looks like, if you look at it quickly and not pay attention closely, you'll think, well, there's just a character and a paragraph, a character and a paragraph, and a character and a paragraph. And they're all the same for all three manuscripts. And the manuscripts are three different lengths. Warren Parrish's goes from verse 4 in chapter 1 to verse 2 in chapter 2. Frederick G. Williams is a little longer, from verse 4 in chapter 1 to chapter 2, verse 6. And the third document that has W.W. Phelps has the first three verses that nobody else has. And then Warren Parrish's starts in the same place, but goes even further to verse 18 of chapter 2 of the present Book of Abraham. So what happens is that so the reason why we say the month of July he did the alphabet and grammar, the alphabets and the grammar and the bound volume, where they transition from these small little leaflets to a big book, and they leave space between different parts, is that in the history of the church for July, it says so this is being written in 1843 with Joseph Smith's help. He's hearing it read on occasion. And it's W.W. Phelps and Willard Richards working together, writing this portion of the history, July 1835 period. Talks about purchasing the papyri, translating part of it, at least, learning who wrote them, Joseph and Abraham. Then about the 17th of July and after, the remainder of the month, they worked on an alphabet of the Egyptian language and a grammar as practiced by the ancients. So that dates it to July. And W.W. Phelps is there helping to write it. he is an eyewitness. He's one of the guys doing it, right? Joseph Smith is hearing parts read on occasion. I mean, before, this is 1842. He worked on the history of the church way beyond that even, you know, hearing parts read, even though that these other guys are writing the actual words. He dictates some parts, but a lot of times W.W. Phelps is working independent from his own memory. So we don't know exactly what's going on, but this is the best source we have for dating what is being created when. So we have the alphabets being created in July and the grammar in July, at least started. They're still working on it, the grammar. They abandoned the alphabets. They moved to the grammar. The grammar is still being worked on until October 1st is when there's an entry in Joseph Smith's journal says the astronomy, of the Egyptian astronomy was unfolded to us. And that is the last part of the grammar before it was abandoned. After this, Joseph Smith, this is probably what happened, even though this is all debated and disputed, but I believe this is the strong, by far the strongest evidence. Joseph Smith's journal on the 19th of November mentions going to the temple and reviewing the construction of the temple with Warren Parrish and Frederick G. Williams. And then it mentions, and then they translated from the Egyptian. So these are the two writers of the two documents, first documents that I mentioned, one by Frederick G. Williams and one by Warren Parrish. Frederick G. Williams, just maybe a paragraph longer than Warren Parrish's, and they both begin at verse 4 of the first chapter of the Book of Abraham. So, and there's evidence that both of them were writing at the same time, that they were writing simultaneously as Joseph Smith was dictating the translation. And the reason why we know that is that both of them make corrections at the same time, and they do it in line, not above the line, meaning they write the wrong word and they both cross out that word and keep on going. And there's only one way to explain that, is that they're both writing at the same time. If one was copying the other, they would just skip the bad part and keep copying. And if they were writing it, why would there be a different dictation at a different time?
So Joseph said a word and then said, no, that's not the right word.
And, yeah.
Okay.
And more than once it happens. There's like 3-4 times where the only way to explain it is that way.
Now, is Joseph using a stone in the hat like he is with the Book of Mormon?
Not sure. There are some hints that he was. I think probably Prepat mentions a stone, and I think Wilford Woodruff mentions the stone, but I'm not sure.
We're not sure that he's looking at the Egyptian characters, because with the Book of Mormon, it seems like the plates were just off on the side.
Right. So I don't imagine he's actually looking. I believe they do have it open on the table because there is a part that mentions the record before you. And when it talks about, a likeness of the gods is in the representation at the beginning of the record that is lying before you. They cross that out because that doesn't sound right when you go to publish that. And they put something else there that's more generic. So, and they both are making these corrections to that in different ways. They both correct it in a kind of a different way.
Okay, so let me make sure. So at the beginning, it looks like they were like, here's an Egyptian character, and this is what we think it means. And here's an Egyptian character, and this is what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And then clearly that was not a correct translation if you're looking
right
at papyrus. So they abandon that, and then they go to this new grammar book, and then essentially Joseph is dictating to them, and they're just writing down what Joseph says. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, so what I've the picture I've painted so far is that they've gone to the valuable discovery notebooks about the mummies, the identity of the mummies. They've moved to an alphabet. And I haven't talked about the content of that too much. Then they moved to a grammar book that is larger and covers more. Then suddenly, and they work on that until October. Then Warren Parish gets hired at the end of October. Then on the 19th and 20th, actually, Joe Smith's journal mentions working on the translation. Then on the 24th and 25th, mentions working on the translation. On the 26th, it talks about something about transcribing the transcribing from the records or something like that. Then Joseph Smith gets sick. They get knocked off that project, never returns to it until Nauvoo in March 8th and 9th. And before that, probably too, Willard Richards makes a copy of everything that was done in Kirtland without any characters in the columns or anything. There's a few editorial changes. They published that in the in March 1st issue of the Times and Seasons. Then on the 15th, they publish chapter 3, 4, and 5. The end of chapter 2, chapter 3, 4, and 5. And these three chapters, they all bear evidence of Joseph Smith's Hebrew lessons. And Joe Smith didn't have his Hebrew lessons until January of 36, January to like April of 1836. So most people date those chapters to Nauvoo when Joe Smith's journal is saying he's doing translating. On the 8th and 9th, Willard Richards is writing in Joe Smith's journal for him about translating for the next issue, which is on the 15th. They're not always on time, but it's the issue that's dated the 15th and has the hypocephalus, the facsimile 2, with all the astrological and planetary, Egyptian astronomy in it. So that's kind of the basic layout, but the apologists want to just mess that all up. And it started with Nibley. And Nibley was way off on his chronology, way off. He tried to date a lot of this stuff to 1837 when some of these men were having problems with the Kirtland Bank, right? And so in Nibley's scheme, they're trying to compete with Joseph Smith. And that all these handwritings and these documents, these are copies, not originals, first of all. So when I was telling you about crossing out and stuff, that proves that those are originals. And so the Book of Abraham, we have the originals. And he didn't dictate those until probably November when his journal says he did. And so that means the alphabets and grammar all came first. Well, Nibley and the apologists after him, John Gee and Carrie Milstein, want to reverse that, which messes everything up. So as a biographer of Joseph Smith, and I'm working on this era right now, I want to get the chronology right. So that's why I took it on and made those videos as part of my working out this chronology. That's what I was mostly concerned with more than anything. So, because it makes a difference of how everything's unfolding. So Nibley's scenario was that Joe Smith had nothing to do with the alphabets or grammar, the bound grammar. The bound grammar actually says grammar and alphabet of the Egyptian language. On the tops of some pages, it just says alphabet too. But it was taken from the alphabet and put into the grammar. in a different way. Okay, so what happens is in the, so I'm going to argue that there's so many, this is such a huge, complicated subject, so it's really hard to know where to enter. But Nibley tried to argue that these men were competing with Joseph Smith, and they tried to reverse engineer Joseph Smith's translation. That they're the ones responsible for the characters in the columns of the translation doc, the Book of Abraham manuscripts, that they wrote it in there trying to guess which ones, and they guessed wrong. And so they're trying to transfer the responsibility for the evidence that Joseph Smith didn't know what he was doing, actually, to the scribes. These men are Joseph Smith's scribes. They're writing in his journal as scribes. They're scribes. They're trying to transfer the responsibility of making all these mistakes. It's the scribes. They're all speculating about which characters go where, and they just got the wrong characters. Nibley tried to argue that it was a completely different scroll somewhere that had red writing, and this Book of Breathings thing has no red writing on it. But the Book of Joseph one does. And the red writing comes from Oliver Cowdery's December of 1835 description in The Messenger and Advocate. Beautifully written, part in red and part in black, and a part, small part in red writing.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with historian Dan Bogle. In our next conversation, we'll talk about Joseph Smith's accent. Have you ever wondered how he sounded? In our next conversation, we'll talk a little bit about how his accent caused some problems when translating the Book of Abraham. He may have sounded a little bit like John F. Kennedy.
Frederick G. Williams and Warren Parrish were writing simultaneously. They spelt the god Elkanah or Elkanah. One spells it mostly Elkanah, and one spells it mostly Elkanah, which reflects Joseph Smith's New England non-rhotic accent, right? Yeah, exactly, exactly. Like the Wata.
I used to live in New Hampshire.
Wata.
Or in New Hampshire.
The idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, stuff like that. That's his accent.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com, and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.